If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, 2A Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody, good folks listening to RJ Hinder, and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good-looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is, and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good-looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also... It also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie. Because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard. Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or... You can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time.
All right, guys, now that we've got the housekeeping out of the way, this is Bill Carnes reporting live. I'm doing interviews throughout the day. Stay tuned from SHOT Show 2010 Live right here in Las Vegas.
Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio. I am standing here with the infamous Dudley Brown of the National Association for Gun Rights. Now, you guys remember I did a story, actually read an email that came out from the National Association of Gun Rights, and I said, I don't know who the hell Dudley Brown is. Well, who is this guy? I'm not going to give endorsements. I'm not going to say anything negative just because I don't know. As it turns out, here we are 1 week later, live in person with Dudley Brown right here at SHOT Show 2010. Dudley, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Bill. I appreciate the invite, and I'm sure excited to be here.
Now, the thing that really got me to want to get a hold of you and have an interview with you here at the show was after I had the show where I read the email talking about...
The UN.
The UN wants to have this whole charter going on, this conference in 2012. So it was an email dealing with that. And when I said I had no idea who Dudley Brown was or anything like that, I had three emails within an hour, all from residents of Colorado, singing your praises. Then I did... I got to tell you, what I found, I liked a lot.
Well, I appreciate that. We have a pretty loyal following in Colorado. Rocky Mountain Gun Owners has been around for 16 years. I've been a gun lobbyist for now. This is my 17th year lobbying Colorado, especially post-Columbine. I helped write the concealed carry law in Colorado. Wish it were better, but we did our best. And so I've been a lobbyist for a long time. And our job, I believe, is to activate gun owners, not to have some Gucci loafer lobbyist in a $2,000 suit approaching politicians, but instead to have hundreds or thousands of gun owners, fervent, passionate gun owners who won't compromise, going to that politician and say, I'm not buying you lunch. I want your vote. I want it now, or I want your office. One of the two. Your vote or your office. That simple. And you either vote with us or we take you out. That's just simple, holding politicians accountable. And unfortunately, in Colorado, there was none of that prior to Rocky Mountain Gun Owners. And Frank, we're trying to bring that to a federal scene with the National Association for Gun Rights.
It sounds like you may have listened to my show because that's the sort of practice that I preach.
Well, National Association for Gun Rights, part of our strategy is we looked around at all the state-level groups. We believe that state-level gun rights groups are where the strength is for our people. We literally created an organization that is a backbone for those state groups. I'm kind of a center mouthpiece. We coordinate with all the no-compromise groups around the country and help build them up, help them understand that, you know, it's a long-term fight. We want you to have some business sense, and that doesn't help us if you fight one battle and then disappear. Don't assemble the army and then send everybody home when the first little battle's done. Assemble that army. Get smarter. Learn how to fight. Be passionate about it, but be professional. Build that group up so that when the fight happens, and they're going to keep happening, no matter who's in the White House, you built a group, you're ready to fight, you know how to fight, you know who to contact, those kind of things. And so that's what NAGR does. NAGR.org is our website, or nationalgunrights.org. And so when we saw this UN Small Arms Agreement pop up again, and it's been popping up for years, we believe this was a major problem right from the get-go, given what the White House and the U.S. Senate looks like right now.
Yeah, it's a pretty ugly mess. I've got to tell you, it's a sad state of affairs when your organization even has to exist. I mean, we're talking Second Amendment rights. We have all the writings of the Founding Fathers. We have all kinds of different court decisions early on. Why we have to fight for rights is a little ridiculous. But they say freedom isn't free and liberty doesn't come cheap. I've actually been a strong proponent on the show where organizations such as the Brady Campaign and BPC, where they say we just want to make sure there's sensible gun laws on the books. Well, it exists. The sensible gun laws are on the books. But when criminals don't follow the laws, they then want to infringe on the rights of people who are law-abiding gun owners. They'll obviously be the only ones to be affected by these laws. Now the laws are on the books, I think those organizations need to go away. Now you're dealing with the politicians. Do you have to deal with any of these groups?
Honestly, I'm going to be real frank with your listeners. You know, Sarah Brady isn't the way we get gun control in America. They're the ones who start the conversation. But unfortunately, it's the National Rifle Association and some other lapdog groups who compromise. That's how we get gun control. The Brady Bill itself was not passed by Sarah Brady. It was proposed by them, but it was really passed by the NRA, Wayne LaPierre, and Bob Dole. It was a deal cut. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't believe in many of the conspiracy theories I hear, except for maybe one, and that's Satan. But I do see and understand how it works in Washington, D.C., and in state legislatures all around the country. And frankly, everywhere I go, our rights are being compromised away by the institutional gun lobby.
Now, so, you're saying compromised. I like to use the word prostituted.
Prostituted. Some of it is just that the NRA loves to be shaker and mover, in places like this, like the SHOT Show, they're all wearing expensive suits and staying in $500 a night hotel rooms. And the truth is, most of these guys never picked up a rifle. They don't carry guns. And so it doesn't bother them, for instance, that they would have to ask permission to carry a gun. As our organization believes, a permit to carry a concealed handgun is a little bit silly. Yes, I have a permit. Don't have a problem with people getting a permit. But what we really hold is true freedom is Vermont carry. You shouldn't have to get that permit. The state of Vermont's the safest state in the nation. And they have no law outlawing carrying a concealed handgun without a permit.
Yeah, absolutely no gun laws on the books at the state level at all in that state.
It's fantastic. And that's freedom. Right now we're trying to push that in, for instance, in the state of Iowa. The state of Iowa in 2009 came very close to passing an Iowa carry law. Well, guess what happened in 2010? Right now, the National Rifle Association is sponsoring a compromise bill, which will probably kill both measures.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Instead of holding politicians accountable, and they go out and cut deals, which basically kills it. Now, with that being said, we're an activist group. We believe we are not the cliche, but we are a real grassroots group. And so we send out emails, and that's a free service. People can get on it, and that's how you probably got it through a friend who sent it to you. We like to alert people when something really is happening. We're building a real group really fast right now.
Good.
Really fast.
Now, I'll give you my 2 cents on this whole CCW thing. 48 of the 50 states have concealed weapons provisions, minus Illinois, obviously, which, with the exception of Chicago, is a very rural community, a very rural state.
Right.
And most of the police chiefs and sheriffs in that state are screaming for concealed carry because they know it lowers crime. And then also, of course, Wisconsin, which has an open carry but not a concealed carry. Now, the thing that really gets me, we've spoken about this on 2A Radio plenty of times, is when you get a provision such as in California, where it's a mother may I sort of system, the Supreme Court has ruled that under no provisions is law enforcement, do they have any duty or any legal responsibility to have to provide any sort of protection to any citizen. Yet, you have to go to the head of the police department or sheriff's department, the very head of the people that don't have to protect you, and ask them if you can protect yourself by some ridiculous system of a mother may I permit system.
Well, Bill, just stick with the example of Iowa, which, you know, we're talking about Illinois or California. Most of your listeners are probably going, yeah, duh, those are communist states by and large. Iowa, middle America, you know, a rural state, a truly, fully rural state like that, you have to have an actual permit signed by your sheriff, even buy a handgun. Now, that's crazy. That is simply crazy. And the reason is...
Wait, something just came to mind. It popped into my head. Shall not be infringed.
I know that's a silly thought, but actually, you're quoting that silly constitution.
How dare I?
Yeah, how dare you? But let's be honest. The Constitution is a piece of paper in a museum. The key behind the Constitution is not a piece of paper. It's you. It's me. It's all the gun owners in America, people who really care about liberty, truly care about it, and are willing to do things that are not on the ranch now, or the plantation, as it were. I like to say that because so many of our people are often saying, "Oh, yeah, but you know, if I didn't vote for John McCain, I'd get worse. So I always vote lesser of two evils." Man, that just proves that we will, no matter what, we will vote for a politician, no matter what his position is on the gun issue.
Yeah, I got to tell you, to actually get anybody that's not prompted by all of the corporate BS, all of the people that would just want to see their agenda approved, somebody who's already been a prostitute in the system for years, is absolutely the sorriest excuse for a political system that this country could ever attend.
Well, the fact is, when gun owners get involved, and truly get involved with principle and a decent strategy, we win. We win. And so, you know, we tell guys, look, here's a decent strategy. Get involved in this manner, not necessarily always through the media. I don't think we usually win through the media. I like to do media for one simple reason. It activates people. I'm not trying to change anybody's mind on your radio program. Frankly,
their mind's already made up.
My guess is,
listening to me.
Yeah, and you know, even if they're not made up on this particular issue, the fact is, they're not. I'm not going to change them with 2 minutes on the radio. I always tell people, you know, everybody in their family has an anti-gun aunt or mom or, you know.
Who is it in your family?
I can't say that.
Oh, come on. It's my dad.
Really?
Mine is my father.
Okay.
Former Marine.
Yeah.
Yeah, thinks that everybody that owns a gun should have to have it locked up at the police station. It can only be hunting, and they can only check it out when their hunting dates are coming. Ammunition's got to be stored there. Otherwise, police and military only.
And
I gave him a list of countries he could move to, and yeah, experience that.
But obviously, you care about your dad, and you spend time with your dad, and you don't spend time on the range, huh?
Actually, he came out and took a two-day course that I ran once upon a time, and has no idea how to load his gun now. It's been about 5 years.
Okay, well, if you think about it, though, we all have those people in our family or friends that are anti-gun, and, you know, you spend 6 hours on Thanksgiving watching football games and eating turkey, trying to convince them, and, you know, you love and care about them, and they about you, and you know what? You don't change their minds in 5 or 6 hours. You're not going to change it with a two-minute radio interview or a 30-second commercial. And the truth is, in America, that's not how we win anyway. I like to use the homosexuals as a great example. The homosexuals are an incredibly small group. Statistically, they are way under 10%. Some people think it's more like 3%.
What a powerful lobby.
And what a powerful lobby. Why? Because they are up for grabs every election. They vote on one issue and one issue only.
All right, folks, stay tuned. We got more coming up after the break. This is your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
The alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us right now. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys, I am standing here with Dudley Brown of the National Association for Gun Rights.
Well, let's be honest, there might be some gun owner union members out there. Your organization, the money, the group you pay dues to, you have to make up by spending 10 times as much money sending it to a gun rights group, because you got to make up for 100 union members. And that's the fact is, those guys need to look at their unions, man. They do the same thing. They punish people who vote wrong against them once. Just once. If you vote against the union as a Democrat in Congress, they will take you out the very next election. So, you know, we believe a focused, even minority, and I don't believe we're in minority, I believe we're certainly a plurality, maybe a majority in America, freedom lovers, is a plenty big enough fighting force. We just need to fight smarter. In fact, if you go to our website, nationalgunrights.org, there's a link called The Real Nature of Politics, which is kind of a maybe a little bit esoteric for many, but a lot of guys will really like that because it's a how to fight strategically in politics. I'm here to tell you, most of what is taught by gun rights groups about how to be effective in politics is really should be termed how to lose in politics 101. There's a gun rights policy conference that's done around the country, and most of all of that is how to lose 101. We believe there's a much better way to fight, and we like to teach that.
All right, so Dudley, let's do this. You're talking to a group of grassroots people right now. What do they do to help the National Association for Gun Rights succeed?
Well, other than letting us have contact with you by signing up for a free email alert, low spam, we don't spam you with anything, getting on that list is a good way for us to chiefly communicate with you. But I believe the smart move is to get involved with your local group, not probably your local gun club as much as a state-level group. Here in Nevada, Gun Owners Nevada is new and up-and-coming group. I think they could be huge. If you're in Oregon, Oregon Firearms Federation is a great group. If you're in Colorado, Rocky Mountain Gun Owners, great, same staff as NAGR. We have Wyoming Gun Owners, South Dakota Gun Owners, Wisconsin Gun Owners. We help plant those groups. You know, New Hampshire Firearms Coalition. We've got a lot of great groups around the country who are willing, who know how to fight. And a lot of times we got to put everybody in a big room and say, this is what we've seen in our state. What are you seeing in your state? How do you write these laws? Right now, of course, Firearms Freedom Act is a big push by many of our groups. We're pushing virtually every state in the nation.
I'm covering that, as a matter of fact, the one in New Hampshire, a felony for any federal agent trying to do the same thing.
That's right.
That's fantastic. I want to see that instituted right here in my home state of Nevada.
That's New Hampshire Firearms Coalition who's writing that. In fact, the nice part is there's a family there in New Hampshire called by the name of the Wheelers. The dad is a longtime state legislator, and son now is the state legislator, and they are the conservative movement in New Hampshire. And they are hardcore pro-gun liberty activists, deeply involved in that, and we help them, hook them up with the right people. You know, we don't always have the expertise on every little issue, but we know the people who do. And so we kind of hook them up, teach them how to write it, teach them how to get other people involved into passing that legislation. It might be that legislation doesn't mean much in a short term. But in the long term, let's face it, it's thumbing our nose at the federal government saying, you really don't have any right to do this. You found your way into regulating firearms through a back door, and by golly, let's close that stinking door. And Bill, the other item I tell your listeners is if you run into a group who's telling you to compromise your rights, jettison them immediately. Fantastic. Do not support people who compromise your rights. We believe it's tough to tell the sheriff someone stole my ranch, when in fact, you gave him half of it. And that's what we did with Brady. If you accepted it, you can't really complain about it, can you? It's what we call fashioning the chains that bind us. And I don't want gold-plated chains. Always look at elected officials. Those are the people you hold accountable directly. If it's a bureaucrat in your state who's having a problem, find out who their boss is up the chain who's elected. Immediately go and take them out of office and say, for this particular reason. If you got a bad sheriff, for instance, in a May issue state, go and knock them out. Just simply take them out on that one issue. We've done it for state legislators all around the country, and we believe that's the recipe for winning for gun owners.
We've hit the NRA a couple of times, and I just want to bring something up. The NRA has claimed 5 million members since the 40s, and they still have 5 million members. Sounds to me like they're losing a lot of ground.
Well, I can tell you this much. 2007, look through the IRS reports, you can see that the NRA's annual budget was $338 million. Now, you figure this out. What could you do to defend our gun rights with $338 million? Sorry, but any
I can talk about it over a lot of hype right there.
That's right. Anybody who has really had even an inkling of reasonable strategy could change America with that kind of money. And I used to be a contract lobbyist for the NRA in Colorado, and all they wanted me to do was kiss politician butt, not kick it. Frankly, it's one, kicking politician butt is kind of a sport with me. I enjoy that.
It sounds like it's a lot more fortuitous.
Yeah, well, nowadays we call it rhino hunting, you know, Republican name only.
Yes.
And that's the good part for gun owners. Right now, if you paid attention to what happened in New York 23 a few months ago, it's rhino hunting season. And there's no bag limit. You don't have to have a plug in your gun. You know, you don't even have to have the permit. You can just go out and hunt them. Knock them out of office. And in our view, we should say gun owners should take that battle to the Republican Party and say, enough's enough, we quit. Our vote's up for grabs by anybody who's willing to vote with us. And, you know, if you don't want to play ball, then okay, fine. You can pay with your office.
Perfect. Dudley Brown, thanks very much for being on here. National Association for Gun Rights. Give us a website one more time.
NationalGunRights.org.
All right, folks, stay tuned. We got more coming up after the break. This is your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth. Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome your guests to listen to us here from the floor of the SHOT Show. It's the largest trade show of its kind in the United States. And it's not only for the public, it's because it's a trade show. It is the 22nd largest show in the United States. And it's a major source of revenue for the National Children's Sports Foundation, which is the Foreign Ministry Trade Association.
Are you guys getting what sort of feedback are you getting on your effect to the ammunition. So if you happen to have an area which is a little moist or gets really extreme temperature shifts, if it freezes where you keep your ammunition, if it gets to the point where you could light a match on the shelf because it gets so hot in there, things to be concerned about, all right? If you, now, of course, underground is a nice, good temperature area, but it's also susceptible to moisture. So if you have an underground shed or underground bunker or something on your property where you keep your ammunition underground, that's fine. However, you need to have moisture protection in there, like a moisture barrier. Some people have things made out of cinder block or concrete. That's fine. Put one of those moisture barriers up. Or coat it with that moisture barrier coating that you can get. It goes on like paint. And try to keep the moisture to an absolute minimum. Especially if you also keep guns in there. Now, with guns, you can oil them up. That's great. But keep in mind, if you happen to have a corrosive primer, that's a primer that leaves some sort of, generally mercury or some other sort of foreign substance in your gun, that can cause corrosion. If you look at Jim Carmichael's book, The Book of the Rifle, finest book ever written by anybody dealing with any kind of firearms, The Book of the Rifle by Jim Carmichael. It's out of print, but you can find it on Amazon.com. If you don't have a copy, go find a copy. It is fantastic. Jim tells a story about his rifle. I think it was a 30-06 when he was a kid. And that thing was just ultimately accurate, absolutely ultimately accurate. He loved it. He would take this thing. He would target shoot with the thing. He would shoot squirrels. He would go hunting with it. It was his companion, his best friend. And one time when he was growing up, I think he was growing up in the Midwest somewhere, and there was just a really, really rainy week for about 5 days. He couldn't go out and go shooting. When the rain was over, it was time to go out and go shooting. So he grabs his gun, looks down the barrel, and it's absolutely toasted. I mean, it's pitted because he had either corrosive powder or corrosive primers, and he didn't clean the gun. And when the humidity came, all that corrosion took effect to the point where it just ate away his fantastic gun. His rifle was done with, never to be fired again. And, of course, he's crushed. And, of course, you know, many years later as he's writing this book, he recalls how he was crushed, still reeling the effects from this. So keep in mind, that sort of stuff needs to stay out of your guns. Keep in mind, it's also in some of your ammunition if you have some of the older stuff or things that are loaded overseas. You don't really have to worry about corrosive primers and corrosive powders and such in the States from different ammunition that's made here. But some of the stuff that's shipped in here, old military surplus type of things, you need to be very careful of that. Make sure after you shoot that, you clean your gun. And also ensure that when you store that ammunition, that if it's too moist, it may get to the point to where it's unusable. A single round of ammunition that is unusable due to storage concerns is unacceptable. You need to store your ammo responsibly. All right? So keep it away from moisture. Keep it to where the temperature doesn't have huge swings, hot or cold. Try to keep your ammunition from freezing temperatures, because that can change up a little bit when it comes to some of the way that some of the powders are made. You know, you've got ball powder, you've got flake powder, you've got the extruded powder, which is kind of a long tube of sorts. It's like a paper towel tube inside of a larger paper towel tube connected with little, straight connectors between tubes. That's kind of what extruded powder is. Stick powder, they also call it. That's a little bit less susceptible to some of the temperature shifts, but flake powder and ball powder is a little bit more susceptible to this. You also have to be careful when you're, I had a project, I've talked about it some time ago on the show, where I ended up with a bunch of 1973 Lake City 308, 7.62 by 51, what have you. And the cases, the necks on the cases were cracked, several hundred of these things. Well, I was a little ticked. I bought this stuff. I got it at an auction. I got it for a song, but I got this stuff, and I wanted to be able to use it. Well, as it turns out, I had a whole bunch of other once-fired mil-spec casings. Now, military-spec casings, the brass, is generally thicker than the casings that you're going to get for just regular sporting use. That's going to change the dynamics when you load these things with how much powder is in there. So I had a bunch of mil-spec casings that were loaded ammunition that had split necks, which were totally useless, and a bunch of once-fired mil-spec casings that had the thicker walls. So what I did was and a lot of mil-spec casings are difficult to deprime. I was able to deprime some of them, there was no way I was going to get the thing deprimed. I would have had to come up with some sort of hydraulic ram to get them out. Anyhow, I full-length sized a few hundred casings, pulled all of these other rounds apart, kept the bullets, kept the powder, kept the primers. I deprimed these casings that had been split. And the thing is I actually pulled almost all these apart by hand. The bullets were so loose, I could literally pull the bullets out. So I ended up reusing all of this stuff. Now, the trick was how much powder was coming out of each casing. I knew I was going to reload the same things. I didn't really need to know what the powder was. It was extruded powder, the stick powder. But I really didn't need to know so much what it was as to how much came out of each case. So about every 10 cases, I would weigh it, and I would write that number down. After I had a few hundred of these out, I mean, I had about, 40 different measures. So I had an average of how much powder was supposed to go back in. I had all of that powder. As it turns out, I was loading to that of an IMR 4895 or a Hodgdon 4895, very, very similar powders, very similar loads. And that was also IMR and Hodgdon both contracted, or had contracts with the companies with Lake City that were loading all of this ammunition at the time. So I was able to use that stuff. And as it turned out, loaded all that stuff up. When I was done, I crimped the case necks around the cannoliers of the bullet. That's on some bullets, you end up having this ridge that's on there. These particular ridges on these bullets, 147 grain mil-spec bullets, the ridges were, it's kind of like the edge of a quarter. All right, you had a little bit of a surface to it. So that's how far deep I set them. I took all the measurements before I started taking these things apart. And then I reloaded them just with different casings. And a lot of the cases, they came out of Lake City casings, 1973, that were the cases, the necks were not annealed. They were not softened, so they cracked over time. I reloaded them, the majority of them, in once-fired Lake City casings, so they came out to the same specs. Some of them went in GG&G casings and a couple others, but all still mil-spec, NATO-spec casings. That's the way I put it all back together. Now, that was a project, and I had to be very, very aware of what I was doing, and I had to be very, very aware of how these things needed to get put back together. So, keeping all of that in mind, if you ever run across the same sort of issue, you have to be very conscious of what's going on. Very conscious of which primers came out, keep those separate, where the powder came, make sure it's being weighed as it comes out. Before you even take them apart, get all of the measurements on these things. Make sure everything's going to go back the same, so it performs the same. So as it turns out, that was the ammunition that I was shooting when I did that one day out at Front Sight to get my my rifle really dialed in for the first day of the precision rifle class. And it's also the stuff I used at the Appleseed Project. And it worked really well. I was happy with the performance. Everything went fine. All right, guys, stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio. Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
Okay, guys, think of ammunition storage also similar to food storage. It's got a bit of a shelf life. Now, the shelf life of ammunition is longer than the shelf life of food, but you also need to make sure that it is clearly labeled for you or anybody else that you might allow to get to your ammunition. Or if you give it away or pass on or whatever, somebody else can readily tell what it is. Having ammunition in code does nobody any good. Just label it what the hell it is. And keep it in some sort of a cataloged format that's readily understandable. So if you need it, you can just grab it and go. If you need it for an occasion of going to the range, you know, I'm going to grab it and I'm going to go. If your buddy says, hey, man, I'm headed up to the range, you want to roll? Yeah, sure, actually, I wanted to recite in my 30-06. So you can grab the gun, go to where your ammunition is stored, grab the ammunition that you're going to shoot in that odd six that you need to sight it in with, grab it and go. Okay. Now, we've talked about this before. I just want to reiterate. Whatever it is that you're going to be hunting or shooting with, sight in with the same ammunition. Now, if you just put the rifle together, maybe it's a new scope, base, and rings, you're not sure where it's hitting or whatever, go to 25 yards, get it on paper, and you can use any ammunition to get it on paper and get it close. Then when you dial it in, use the ammunition that you're going to be using that you're sighting the gun in for. All right? You don't have to use your $1.50 around stuff to get it on paper. You can use your old mil-spec stuff to get it on paper and get it close. Once you're about to do some of the finer adjustments, put the stuff in there that you're going to be hunting or shooting with and sight in with that. You can't sight in with a 155-grain bullet and you're going to end up shooting a 190-grain bullet when you go actually hunting or whatever purpose you're going to be shooting with. You got to dial it in with the same ammo. You can get it close with the other stuff, then dial it in with the right stuff. Keep everything clearly marked and also check it from time to time, because if you use the duct tape, sometimes that stuff will dry up and curl off and flake away. It's not a be-all, end-all. If you have a label, sometimes those will corrode. Sometimes stuff might drip onto a label if you've got it there and you can't read it very well anymore. So make sure that it's there. Use some sort of a permanent marker like a Sharpie. Get the thing dialed in well, and then make sure that you've got the things labeled and you check those labels. Okay, that's how you want to keep your ammunition stored. Even if it comes in a factory case, you want to make sure that that factory case is appropriately marked with your own label, with your own system. All right? That will help everybody out. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Guys, thanks for sticking around. Stay tuned for the Global Research Hour, followed by the Ernest Hancock Show, coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday. I will not.